Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. We will be starting the show by talking about tools that every gardener should have with our guest, Liz Freemuth. She's back with us, provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. She'll also have some advice for finding new plants and seeds to use this spring, and I hope you'll join in with your own comments or questions. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Liz Freemuth, good to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back. Always a pleasure.
Well, let's start talking about tools. What tools should every gardener have?
Well, you know, first and foremost, when you're looking at tools, do some research and kind of look at which are the best you can afford. So, you know, like for me, I go through a lot of tools in a year, and so I want good tools, but I also want tools that when I lose them in a pile of leaves, I'm not going to cry. And so when we look at different tools, you know, the ones that gardeners almost always have are going to be a good set of pruners or secateurs if you want to get European with it. A nice hoe, handheld and a long-handled. A good shovel, a good small shovel and a good big shovel. You also want a nice hedge clippers if you do any kind of shaping, formal shaping on your shrubs, and something to carry all your tools in and to carry your materials in is really a good thing too. Now, in addition to that, what I like is a jeweler's loop. It's small. You can put it in your pocket and it doesn't get lost in a tool bag, but that jeweler's loop allows you to get up close and personal to what's going on with your plants without having to have electricity or batteries involved. So you can put that down on the leaf. You can take a look at what insects are doing their business and get a better idea of if you've got anything growing on a leaf. Now, should we go back and start talking about the individual tools, Larry?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was checking it off. I've got everything, but I don't have a jeweler's loop. So
It's a good one. And you can get pretty nice ones that are going to go, you know, an average one will be 10 power, or you can get 20, 30, 40, depending on how up close and personal you want to get. So we start talking about quality tools, hand pruners. You know, everybody has got a different sized hand. And so when you go to look at pruners, it's you may be trying the wrong size for your hands when you're in the store. So take a look at the different lengths and the different sizes on the pruners to see which one fits your hand really well. For me, I use a 7-inch pruner, and it's not that I have tiny hands by any means. They're more man hands than anything, but it's the reach. And so when that pruner opens up all the way, you don't want it falling out of your hand. Or, you know, if the snapback on the spring is so intense that it actually does fly out of your hands, that's not productive to good working. So you take a look at what's comfortable in your hand. And what I have found, what I have found as a brand that works really well on a number of levels is ARS. It's A as in Apple, R as in Randolph, S as in Sam, ARS. And it's a Japanese-made pruner. Well, they've got a bunch of gardening equipment, but it's Japanese-made. The steel is phenomenal on the blade, holds an edge beautifully, and it sharpens very, very easily. And the hand is very easy to hold. So the handles work really well with a hand. Now, I've got an 8-inch for larger diameter branches, but the 7-inch does quite a bit. And I don't know, what kind of a pruner do you use, Larry?
I'm trying to remember what I've got out there. Mm-hmm. I've got a small, I do have one, I think it is 7 inches. And I've got another long-handled pruner that I use as well. And that one, frankly, a neighbor was getting rid of it and gave it to me.
I love that price, don't you? Love the price, love the price. Yeah. And I have found that, you know, like with the ARS brand, I found the blades on a lot of their things in their line are really quite nice and hold an edge really, really well. So that's kind of important for somebody who's out pruning a lot. You don't want to have to be sharpening that edge every 6, 7, 10 cuts. You don't want to be doing that. So you want a tool that's appropriate for your use. Someone who only goes out and makes 3, 4 cuts, something with a softer blade is not going to make that much of a difference to them. As long as it's sharp and it feels good and it works, then that's going to be good for them. For somebody like me who does a lot of cuts, I want something that's going to hold an edge. And with that, and then also this year I'm trying another Japanese brand as well. And Felcos are always a good one. Those I think are Swiss made. Those are good, and they do hold an edge fairly well. But for me, the handle's a little heavy. And so I like something with a little bit lighter handle. And so that works well for me. excuse me. As far as shovels go, my goodness, that's a personal choice for a lot of people. But for me, I will tell you, I have broken almost every single shovel that's made out there. I have snapped it off trying to bounce a tree up out of the ground. And so this year, I have had my bully shovel for almost an entire year now, and I have not broken it yet. So that one's been holding up well. And that brand was Bully, and it's a nice long-handled shovel. But the other brand that I have found works really well for smaller shovels is the Radius brand, which makes really nice ergodynamic tools for, shall we say, those of us getting up there in our experience level. I'm not going to say age, but experience level. And we need something a little kinder to the hand. So they've got these lovely rounded handles on the top, which make it easy to manage. And they have got a series called ProLite. And that ProLite series has really done well for me. It's a narrow shovel, got a floral shovel with a longer handle, so maybe about 40 inches long. And the shovel, the blade itself is only about 6 inches wide, 6.5 maybe. And it is great for all of those quart and even the, you know, the gallon size, even upwards of 3 gallon. It just takes you a few more cuts to go around. But the depth is almost perfect. So you know when you've got the top of that shovel in the ground and you've got it cleaned out, you've got the right depth for planting. And so that to me is an added bonus, so I don't have to try and guess what I'm doing. So those have really, I mean, for me, those have been kind of go-tos. And, you know, something else that we tend to forget about are the things that make it comfortable for us to work. So whether that's a knee pad or, for me, it's a rocking garden seat. I found this at one of the big box stores, and it's a seat that has kind of an inverted seat on the bottom, and you can sit on it and kind of rock back and forth. And that allows me to reach quite a distance to really pivot and, you know, go from one thing to the other without having to get up and move as often if I'm working down low. Knee pads, something that's got the really thick gel in it, will save your knees. And for those of us outside a lot, saving the knees is a really, really important thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like, I will tell you one of the handiest things I picked up, and I buy a new one every year, even though I don't need a new one, I still buy a new one every year, is a folding wagon. You know, we started to see those out on the market maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. And it folds up flat, goes into the car, into the trunk. And so I've got a handy, you know, because the wheelbarrow won't go into my car, won't go into the trunk. So unless you're driving around in a pickup truck, you can't really be prepared to haul unless you've got a collapsible hauling utensil. And for me, this folding wagon is fantastic. It's canvas on the sides, and it holds quite a bit. You can load it up with tools, load it up with plants, and still collapse it, pop it back in the trunk, and away you go. So it works out really, really well. And in that vein, I also picked up a dog mudroom sort of thing for the back seat of my car, and it attaches to the headrest on both the front and the back, and it has canvas that's water repellent, and it has sides on it, so you can zip up the sides and just load that baby up with plants, and you don't dirty the inside of your car. And it folds flat. I can keep it in the trunk. Handiest tool. I mean, one of the best
things.
I
love that idea.
And it's just so handy. I mean, plastic is great, but you can't reuse it. And so, you know, this, it works out fantastic. And the dirt comes right off, and you just wipe it up, and away you go. It's really nice. So those are the things sometimes we don't think about as tools, but they really do make our gardening lives a lot easier.
I would strongly agree with that. I'm making notes as we talk along for spring purchases.
Well, and you know, if we're making lists, another thing that I really use so often are the trug tubs, and you can find them in a lot of the farm stores will have them. Garden centers carry them. They're the plastic, sometimes come in these vibrant colors. You can get yellow, green, red, pink, orange, black, whatever you'd like. And they're that kind of softish plastic material that have handles on the sides. And they are another handy thing to have. And this last year, I picked up a colander for a smaller one that I had. And so it's a trug with holes in it, like a kitchen colander, but in the like 3 gallon, 2 gallon size, so that you can pick your veggies into that colander and then put, you know, for me, I put that into the other trug, fill that with cold water, rinse them out, then pull the colander up, and the dirt and everything is in the tub at the bottom. And so, and you can use it to rinse them off with the hose, which is nice, and you don't, they're just absolutely fantastic. And you can find them at a variety of price levels, depending on the quality you're looking for, and, you know, whether it's this year's color or last year's color. And so those you can find at most garden centers. You can find them at Big Box. You can find them online. You can find them all over the place. And so those are really handy. And a soil knife and trowels also, you know, those are things that most of us can't do without for that small digging that we need to do. And one of the nicest trowels that I've used over the last few years, I know one maker is Wilcox, but it's really essentially a heavy-duty piece of metal that's folded sort of into a V and then tighter around the handle. And I have not broken that one yet. So it's one piece of metal with a handle on it. And otherwise, I have broken and bent almost every trowel out there. So that's one that has really held up over time. And they've got different widths on it. So you can do something that's a little wider, or you can do something a little narrower. And those come in really, really handy. And then I would be remiss if I did not mention to people as a tool for working outside, sunscreen. Please do not forget your sunscreen as a tool. Hats, long sleeve shirts, you know, anything that is going to help protect you for those hours out in the sun, because that makes it possible for us to keep breathing. So do that. You know, please do that.
Please do that. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hole. You can join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. What's your favorite tool? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Lee Rayburn, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services all around the country. Even though she's right here in Wisconsin, she has her business, The Garden Hoe. Great to have her back. And talking to start the show about tools of the trade for the gardener, she's had some great advice, and I'm already seeing a number of emails relating to this and some calls as well. Let's take a call. Jerome in Manitowoc County, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to share some comments on my favorite tools, and I almost missed one, and I'll start with, before I leave the back door, come summertime, we're loaded up with bug spray and the sunblock. So that's always first. But my favorite tool is probably a good pair of Falco pruners. I grow wine grapes, so those are, you know, irreplaceable. Then the other main tools is I got a nice unbreakable shovel from Lowe's with a lifetime warranty. So that's kind of a losing proposition for Lowe's, but it's been a good shovel for me. The other thing I've really become fond of is the Hori Hori knives. After breaking so many of the little handheld spades, I've switched to the Hori Hori knives, and they just do a better job and just have more of a purpose. But I've broken all those now, too. So this year I'm on a search for a good Hori Hori knife. But
The Hori Hori knife is indispensable, which I kind of call soil knife. And so, you know, I'm with him. I have broken and actually I will admit I've lost quite a few of them too, because you'd think you'd remember where you set them down, but not always as you move through a bed. But the Hori Hori knife, soil knife are really indispensable, and you might want to try that Wilcox, which it doesn't have a blade, which is the only downside to it, because the Hori Hori knives have an edge on them that you can really sharpen up nice, which does wonder. But I'm with you. I haven't found one of those that I can't break yet either.
Thanks a lot, Jerome. Appreciate it very much. Jim in Stevens Point, what's on your mind? Did we lose Jim? We may have lost him. He has a new tool to talk about. John emailed her favorite tool is her half moon shovel. It helped her expand her garden. It was great for adding curves to garden edges. It even did the job when she dug a hole for her pondless waterfall. It really helped to keep the hole very rectangular, making the rest of insulation a breeze. What do you think, Liz?
Oh, the half moon cutters are wonderful. And, you know, we tend to forget that grass creeps in. And so you need to beat it back when you're talking about your flower beds, vegetable beds, et cetera. Even when you've got edging around them, that grass still creeps around. And so having that half moon cutter is fantastic. And most of them you can put a good edge on, and so you can get a nice sharp thing to cut with. Some of them do not really have a bevel. They don't come with a beveled edge, and so you may have to take that into a tool, you know, a sharpening specialist to get an edge put on it, because most of us don't have the tools or the know-how to handle the steel properly to do that. But when you go to buy one, look for one that has a bevel on the edges. You know, and almost any tool that you're going to buy, check to see where that bevel edge is, and that will give you the edge you're going to sharpen. So when you look for a half moon, look for one that's good, that you don't have to take to have a bevel put on it. But yeah, love it. Love it. Can't do without that one either.
Pete in Reedsburg emailed to say a spading fork is a must for him for moving perennials and even general digging.
Absolutely. And does he say long handle or short handle? Because the spading, I've got one of each. And, you know, that's on my list was actually about three pages long of essential gardening tools that go in the car every time I go somewhere. But the spading fork that I found, and I think that this was a radius brand as well. And I'm not being paid by anybody for this. I'm telling you, the listeners, the ones that I haven't broken. So these are tools that actually hold up really well. But Radius makes a long-handled spading fork, which is fantastic, because often we'll be able to find the short-handled. And for anyone who's got some height on them, not me, but other people, that makes it really difficult or uncomfortable to dig for an extended period of time. So the long-handled spading fork has done a fantastic job for me so far. So, you know, if you're looking for one of those, go for it. But spading fork, for those of you that don't know what that is it's a flat-tined fork. And what growing up, we always referred to as the potato fork. You know, it's a wide-tined, four-tine fork that you use for digging potatoes out of the garden, et cetera. And now it is referred to as a spading fork, but we, growing up, called it a potato fork.
Matt called to ask for your recommendation for a good bulb planter.
Oh, you know, I use just the soil knife or a trowel for that. If you've got somebody to help you, then I would use just a very narrow perennial shovel and do a two-man job. I have not had good luck using bulb planters, and part of that is the soil has to be just so in order to get, in my experience, in order to get that bulb planter to work as beautifully as it should. So you're almost better off just doing a shovel, you know, using a small shovel of some sort and either taking the dirt, kind of lifting it aside if it's well worked, or taking it up and out of the ground, working it out, put the bulb in and put the soil back in. When you start getting into soils that are heavier, clay, et cetera, the bulb planters don't work quite so well. So, sorry, don't have a recommendation on that one. I do like to use, if the soil is decent, if it's a loamy blend, then you can actually use a bulb drill, and that works fairly well. So you get that nice long bulb drill, get it on a drill, drill down, pull that soil in and out, get it nicely worked up, and you should be able to drop the bulb in and return the soil back in.
Let's take another call. Chuck in Viroqua, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Compost, and I'm looking for something that I can chop up, you know, the heavier stalk sprouts and corn stalks and, you know, those, you know, you throw them in the melon, still pretty
good. You're breaking up a little bit, but Chuck, I think we've got the idea. He wants a suggestion for chopping up the stuff for composting. And as he was talking about the heavy duty stuff, that like corn stalks and so forth, what do you have for us?
Boy, that one, you know, what I use at home is I just use a lawnmower, a push mower, and run it out, you know, put it in kind of a layer that you can get over easily with the lawnmower. And I will tell you, I cheat. I do it against the side of a building, and so it doesn't go all over the place. You just kind of lay it out sort of close to a building without windows and holes in it, and then just shoot it against the side of the building, rake it up, and away you go. But otherwise, you can actually use a small chipper to do that, and I'm sure other people are going to have wonderful suggestions for what they use for it. I will tell you, I'm not one that's going to take a lot of time to chop stuff down for compost. I'm a piler, so the stuff goes into the pile, and, you know, if it needs to be chopped, you can give it a hack with a knife, et cetera, you know, a machete if you've got it. But really, aside from that, it just, I let nature do its thing.
Yeah, I've got a machete. It works pretty well for that sort of thing, to be honest. Thank you again,
and
Chuck, for calling.
Kind of satisfying to get all your aggressions out too, isn't it?
A long time ago, I spent a year at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, and a gift I got from a friend was a machete that I brought back from Trinidad, and I've had it ever since. So, and it was handmade. It's really, really nice.
Oh, I bet beautiful.
It is. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Kesla emailed that she's new to composting and thinks she understands the basics, but's wondering if you have any suggestions or thoughts for a newcomer. She's on a farm and looking for ideas. So she's probably got a little room if she's on a farm.
Yeah, and if you have a little room and you don't have neighbors close by, then that's kind of perfect for composting because you can add some of the animal waste that you've got in there as well to the plant material. And again, I'll go back to what I said before. I'm a piler, so we just have a spot where we put our compost material, and you want to have enough moisture in there so that things have a chance to really percolate and work. But I will tell you, if you don't pay that much attention to it, it still is going to decompose. Nature is going to provide you with moisture. The greener, the kind of non-dry materials, whether that's grass clipping on or non-oiled food materials, so the lettuce that you cut up that doesn't have dressing on, or the trimmings from vegetables that you don't use for stock, you know, anything like that that you're going to put into compost, that is going to work to provide moisture in that mix. And really, if you let it sit long enough, it is going to do its job. Nature has a way of just doing it, whether we're paying attention or not. If you really want to actively do it, then you confine it to a specific space, and you really monitor how much moisture is in there, and you monitor the temperature with compost thermometers, which look like really long instant read meat thermometers. That's essentially what it is. And what you're looking to do with your compost pile is to destroy any of the insects and pathogens that may be in there. So you're looking for an internal temperature of somewhere around 165 degrees. That will take care of killing any of those things. Somewhere between 160, 170 is, and you may get it spike up a little bit higher if you've got a lot of high nitrogen materials in that compost. But you know, when you start seeing that internal temperature get to that range, then you start flipping it. So you're going to bring those materials on the outside of the pile, bring them toward the center and sort of mix it up and flip it around so that everything gets a chance to get that heat and kill the pathogens and really work at speeding up that decomposition process. But if you don't do that and you just make a pile, eventually it will all decompose.
It will indeed. Kirk and DeSoto, let's give you a chance. Hi, Kirk.
Hi. You're talking about garden tools. I just accidentally come across, it's a Campsilus, C-A-M-I-L-L-U-S, titanium knife. And the knife I use it's called a Carnivore Z. Mm. And it's got a razor blade on the edge. You know, it's just razor sharp. The tip, you can cut with a tip. You can cut with a blade. It has a saw blade. You can dig with it. You can chop with it. You can machete with it. You can't hurt this thing. And
wow.
It comes with a nice sheath.
How long is the blade on it?
The blade looks to be 10, 11 inches long.
So good size one then.
It's got good weight, you know, for chopping. Uh-huh. But for, you know, working around plants, the tip digs, cuts. If you got something, a stick or something, you know, a box elder or something, you can use a saw blade. It's incredible. You know, it's a survival knife, I think. But it's all in one, and you can't break it.
And it's called what? Carnivore?
It's Camelus is the...
Cannibal? Okay.
Camelus, C-A-M-I-L-L-U-S. That's the brand, and the type is Carnivore.
Okay.
Yep, Carnivore Z. It's just an incredible knife. Anybody wants to use one. I had up to 2 acres of garden, and I carried it with me religiously.
We'll have to take a look. I have not seen that one before, and I always love hearing about a new tool.
Yeah, thank you, Kirk. Appreciate it very much. Really appreciate that comment. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. Speaking of emails, Deb in Plymouth emailed that she thinks the last time you were on, you talked about a long-handled tool to weed while standing up. And if you did, what do you call it? What is it called?
Oh, boy. You know, I've used quite a few. So let's see. Long-handled weed tool. Last year, I was trying a hoe that looks almost like it has a golf club attached to it, and the blade itself is almost shaped like a putter, and it has a blade on the side that would face you and is angled toward the ground, and you pull. So it's a pulling weed removal tool, and it has a long handle, like a hoe, like a standing hoe would have. And it really has been very, very nice. Now, you know, I went to look on the website that I had gotten it at last year, looked a couple of weeks ago to pick up a couple more, and I couldn't find them. And so it's a handy tool, but I can't find it. And so I will keep looking, and if I locate the name of the company and the name of the tool, I will send it to Larry, and then he can post it on the website so that we've got a link for that. But that one has been pretty good. I have actually tried a number of push and pull hoes for weeding, and I think that this is not – I don't want it to come across as a male-female thing, but it seems as though the women that I have working with me, they prefer the pull tools, whereas opposed the guys prefer the push tool. And I don't know if that has to do with upper body strength or not. I'm not sure. Arm strength. I don't know. But some of the pull tools that I have found good, one is actually called a circle hoe. And it's circle as in the shape. And it actually, the hoe blade itself is an O. And the blade is sharpened so that as you pull toward you, it cuts. And the nice thing about that one is that the sides are not sharpened on the outside. So if you brush against the plants, you're less likely to take out anything on the plants that you didn't intend to do. And it doesn't give you that width of weeding that you would want for a vegetable garden, but for going around flowers and perennials, I find that to be a really good one. You know, we start talking about tools to weed with. The difference between what you need and what works well comes down to what are you weeding. You know, and I find when I'm in perennial beds, I'm not going to use a long-handled tool for the most part, because I don't want to disturb the soil. Often the perennial beds will have mulch or some sort of a moisture retention product on it. I don't want to disturb that much, because then you disturb the weed bed. So those I'm more likely to hand pull or to work down closer to the ground and, you know, maybe use a soil knife to pop them up out of the ground without disturbing the surrounding areas and really pulling that weed seed bed up. So that makes a difference as to what you're using. In a vegetable garden, if you're hand hoeing, you want to get the most bang for your effort. So you want a wide blade on your hoe that's not going to disturb the roots, but is going to get those weeds in between the rows. So, you know, it really varies. But last year, that's probably the one I was using that we had talked about.
All right. Well, Sherry in Plum City, what's on your mind? Hi.
Hi. I'm an old gardener, but I learned so many things the hard way. So many things your guest is talking about are wonderful tools and things I have tried. One thing I had an experience with was I have a compost bin. It's in a black tub-like container. It's not a tumbler type. And so I thought, I was reading a garden catalog, and I thought, you know, I'm going to try ordering some red wiggler worms for my compost bin. And they came, and I put them in the bin, and I had an active bin kind of going. And I was stirring the worms in, and I actually began to overthink it. I started thinking, do the worms know they're supposed to stay in this bin? I'm stirring and I'm adding and I'm stirring, but every time I got to the point where the bin was ready to be emptied, I kept saving the worms that I could find, and I found that they all sort of go to the center if you don't stir it often enough, and they bunch up. And then they go to the bottom, so you do have to keep them stirring. But I found myself saving them so I could add them to the new bin when I put them. But can you tell me if you've had experience with worms in your bin?
Yeah, not a lot. I started doing some vermicomposting in the kitchen under the sink and putting material in there. And my kids were small at the time, and they were would actually go in, pull the worms out, and then try to go fishing with them. So I kind of abandoned my house vermicomposting project. But there are wonderful resources available, and I know UW Extension has got some great materials on vermicomposting. So if anybody out there would like to get started on it, they've got a really nice how-to to walk you through it.
Sherry, thank you very much for calling. Let's see. Margie emailed to recommend Cobra Head Weeders. It has a multiple length handles and is a Wisconsin made product. Are you familiar with the Cobra Heads?
I have actually used something Cobra Head like, but that actual product, no, I have not. But I'll take a look at it this year and give it a whirl.
Yeah, why not? Cobra Head. And Tom in Barnum, Minnesota, emailed, and he was talking about among the most essential tools that he uses in the vegetable garden are those that help him manage soil structure, especially breaking up hard pan and reducing compaction. These include a deep spader, grub hoe, and digging fork. He would also use a broad fork if he had one.
Yeah, if you can get a broad fork, and they come under different makes and different people offer them at different times. It seems like they sort of run a cycle as to how and where they're available. But the broad fork that I'm thinking of is really a tool that is more European use than it is here. And it's a straight up and down, very wide fork. It may have 6, 8, 10 tines on it that go straight down, and it has handles on the side, and you put that into the ground, and some of them you stand on, you know, 1 foot or 2 foot, however ambitious and daring you are, and you rock that back and forth, and that loosens the soil down deep without changing the soil profile and the soil structure. And so that allows you to loosen that hard pan up and then really get in there with some other type of tool to turn the dirt over. I'm not a huge fan of rototilling unless, you know, if you've got an in-ground garden, a rototiller is fantastic. But when you're talking about raised beds, which a lot of people do, there's no need to get in there with a rototiller. You get in there with a broad fork, or you get in there with a garden spade and loosen the soil. You know, flip it a little bit, just mix it up a little bit, and oftentimes that's enough. When you start really pulverizing the soil and turning it into powder, it's not as healthy for the plants, for the roots to take hold. Because think about that. If you make that soil structure so tiny, as soon as it gets hit with water, that's going to compact. And where you compact, you make it more difficult for most roots. There are some plants that love compaction, but for most roots, they need something to move through, not to stop them like a wall. So that's where, you know, using the broad fork, et cetera, are fantastic. Good suggestion.
Liz Freemuth, our guest today. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Liz Freemuth. Her business, The Garden Hoe. Always great to have Liz come by, and thank you so much for joining in. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Robin in Verona, we'll go to you now. Hi, Robin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was just responding to the question from another caller about a long-handled weeder.
Yeah.
I use a walker. So I had been using the Garden Bandit in my elevated beds, but I needed a long-handled one for my perennial, and they make one. They make a companion one that you just buy the weeder part, and you just twist it into any pole you have, and it's a pole variety. She described doesn't have blades on the side, and it won't disturb your mulch because the stuff goes right through the opening of the weeder.
And what was it called?
It's called the Telesco Weeder. T-E-L-E-S-C-O Weeder.
Okay. And
you just buy the attachment, and then you can just put it on your own pole.
Was that readily available? Did you find it online or locally?
I found it online. I had gotten my Garden Bandit locally, but then I heard about it at the garden show one year.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, great. I love the Garden Bandit, the hand weeding one, so I just got this one.
Excellent. I'm going to take a look at that and see. You know, I always learn so much because gardeners are so inquisitive. We're all looking to make our lives good and our plants good. And so I love learning about new things. So I'm going to look that one up.
Thank you, Robin. Appreciate it. Well, Todd in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Good morning. Say, I'm calling regarding the worms in the compost. I'm an avid composter, and in the winter, we still generate kitchen scraps, but I don't want to just mound them up in the compost pile to get frozen. So I keep a worm farm in my basement, and I put the scraps in there along with a little newspaper, and I get red wigglers from the bait store, and I compost throughout the winter doing that, and then in the spring, I will move those red wigglers out into my compost bins so that they can work away on that. And then when I harvest the compost in the fall, I harvest the red wigglers and move them back into the worm farm. So it allows me in our climate to compost all year long.
Oh,
how big of a container do you farm with in the basement, and how many wigglers do you use for that? Hmm.
Well, you know, I just started with a dozen red wigglers from the bait store, and then I use a Rubbermaid container, just a standard Rubbermaid container, and I do a double container. I'll drill 1/8-inch holes in the bottom of it so that the liquid can drain, and then that I use that to fertilize my houseplants in the winter.
Nice, nice,
and
yeah.
It supercharges them.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
We're taking notes here, Todd, as you talk.
That's right. I may have to give vermicomposting a try again.
Well, Todd, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
I've turned a buddy onto this, and he said that he puts night crawlers into his worm farm, and then he uses them for fishing because the red wigglers are a little too small to get on a hook.
Yeah, okay. My kids weren't that successful with the red wigglers, but it didn't prevent them from harvesting my red wigglers.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Well, Mike in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. This is Mike Jenks. I used to be in the plant clinic a long time ago. I used to be a landscaper, and we used to, in the winter time, we'd take all the tools and we painted them all white, so we can find them on the road, on the lawn.
I thank you for that.
What a great idea. Mike, thank you. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you know, there's ways to get around losing things.
There definitely are. And, you know, one of the things we didn't talk about is now is the perfect time for those of us who put our tools away without properly taking care of them. Now is an excellent time when we're looking at snow and not a whole, you know, nobody wants to go out and prune when it's like this. So this is a great time to get those tools out and get them cleaned up and get them sharpened up and make sure they're well taken care of. And, you know, now I've got time that I can, a little bit, that I can take the pruners apart and clean them up and oil them up and sharpen them beautifully. And, you know, really it doesn't take much to clean our tools up. You really just need 3-in-1 oil, some steel wool if they need to get a little rust taken off of them, and then get out your sharpening stones and get busy and get those edges nicely tuned up for spring and for your winter pruning. You know, winter pruning is coming up here, and you want to have your tools ready to go for that.
Scott in Madison, thank you for calling.
Yes, recommending a tool. We in the military called it an entrenching tool. About a 2.5 or 2 foot long shovel where the head swivels. You can either have it as a standard shovel or have it at 90 degrees and use it to pull or chop.
Mm. Nice. I have seen those. I think I've seen a few more of those over the last few years. And that's a military thing. That comes from the military?
Originally, now they call it a camping tool. And they won't have it in the garden supplies. They'll have it with the camping. And it folds up nice and neat and gets out of the way. But it is so handy. You can cut roots with it. You can. It's an all-purpose tool. And the one I've got is over 70 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And still going strong, right?
You got it.
Scott, thank you. Another good tip. Wow. A listener,
well, you know,
by the way. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Liz.
I was going to say one thing about those short-handled tools. You know, when you think about how often you're sitting on the ground or kneeling on the ground and have to get up to get a long-handled tool, having those short ones is fantastic because you can work from a little bit lower height. And, you know, a tool like that that actually came from the military, you know, it is going to withstand the abuse that you can put on it. So it's not going to be a wimpy one that you're going to bend and break right away. So those are handy.
A listener emailed to ask if you could repeat the brand of the trowel that you use.
The one that Wilcox, Wilcox, is one maker. You know, there may be other ones out there. And they have different levels of those tools, and they may call it a trowel, they may call it a soil knife, so they might look under both of them, but Wilcox. I know that often you'll get a choice between sort of an aluminum looking, where it doesn't have the shiny stainless steel look, and some are stainless steel. I really don't find any difference between the use in them, so if it's a price point, and there's no difference in the longevity or how it works, I'll go for the lower price point on that.
Yeah. And John in Madison emailed to recommend the Ironton brand rolling garden cart with swivel, adjustable seat, pneumatic tires, steerable under seat, tool tray, rear basket for a 5-gallon bucket for debris. It's $75 at Northern Tool, and it's from Ironton, Ironton.
Now, if that came motorized, we'd be set. That would be perfect. It would be. Those are handy. Those are really handy, handy tools. So, yeah, that's a good suggestion. I'll go out and take a look at that one, too.
Well, has the pandemic changed your work to very much, Liz?
Yeah, yes, it has. I have stopped interacting personally, you know, in person with clients to a certain extent. And part of that is, you know, because we don't want to infect each other. And I go to a lot of different places, and I don't want to carry anything from one place to the next. And so we have gone to more texting, more email, more phone calls, sending pictures back and forth, and then really limiting that meeting to when it really counts. And so it makes it a little bit more difficult for both of us, for both me and my clients, but I think that has kept us safe throughout this. And really, people are so, so into gardening over this last year. And oftentimes I can help them over the phone and I don't have to be there in person. So it's kind of a shame because I miss seeing people,
yeah.
But don't we all? Don't we all?
Don't we all? Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business, and her business is called The Garden Hoe. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today as we visit with Liz Freemuth, providing concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. Plant questions or tool comments or questions, give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Liz, we have Barbara from Milwaukee online, so let's go there. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the show. I would like to offer a recommendation for a hand trowel. I use it both for planting and weeding, made by OXO, O-X-O. It's got a really nice, firm but ergonomic padded handle. And I use the transplanter type that has a narrower blade. So you can use it, you can get a dandelion out entire root. The only downside to it is the handle is black. So like one of your previous callers, I spray paint mine blaze orange. But I work with a lot of men, so I've taken to spray painting them blaze pink because no man absconds with a pink candle.
Good for you, Barbara.
Nice move.
And OXO, O-X-O.
Yeah, they make a lot of nice kitchen tools that are good to the hand. And so I have not tried their garden tools. We'll give it a whirl. Why not?
Yeah. Why not? Thanks again, Barbara. Nick in Madison, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Larry. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just sitting here listening to you talk about tools, and I was reminded of a great homegrown, homemade tool company in north central Kansas, where I grew up, a little bitty town called Mundon, Kansas. I think there might be 100 people there on a good day, but they have a company there called Proho, P-R-O-H-O-E, and they make what they call the Rogue Hoe, and the U.S. Forest Service actually uses them when they're going out in the areas where they're cleaning out brush and that, but they make all different sizes, and the great thing about them is they repurpose disc blades, so the discs that farmers use when they're discing their ground, they repurpose those. So farmers from all over the state and the area can take their old used disc blades into them. They'll sharpen them up and cut them into the sizes and shapes that they need. And so it's a great, you know, recycled, repurposed product that's made in a small town, and they ship all over the country, all over the world.
You know, I'm online now. Yeah, I'm online now looking at them, and they've got quite a variety of tools. And you can tell there were at least some of them were are part of a disc. That's pretty cool.
Nice. I'll take a look at that when I get near my computer. Wonderful.
Yeah.
What a good suggestion.
Thank you, Nick. Richard in Little Chute, your turn. Hi.
Hi there. Oh, you're talking about all these hand tools and stuff, but the soil is very abrasive, and I think you need to figure out ways of keeping them sharp so it's easier to work with those tools. You know, a good file or a good grinder to sharpen them.
Yes. You're absolutely right.
Yep, and I prefer, I mean, a grinder is good if you know how to handle metal. And people who professionally sharpen tools are really about the only ones that, in my opinion, should be using grinders unless you really know metal and you really know grinding. What I learned how to sharpen tools with a grinder on my grandpa's knee when I was about 6. Yeah, that doesn't sound safe now. Nobody would be doing that now. But one of the things that, and he was a metal worker, and one of the things that I learned over the years is you have to know when to stop heating that metal up or you'll weaken the blade. So he's absolutely right. You need to figure out how to keep those blades sharp, but do it in a way where you're not going to wreck your blade. And oftentimes what we've got available to, you know, most of us, if we don't have access to a professional sharpener, person to do it, is you look at stones. So you've got sharpening stones, you've got files that you can use. There's diamond files for, you know, really a nice hone on it. And oftentimes it's a combination of all of them. You know, if you hit rock with a tool that you're using outside and you ding that blade, you really do need to either know how to take that down and take that chunk to out of the blade so that it's down to a smooth edge again, or you need to take that and take it to somebody and have it done. But most of the time, we can actually take out the small nicks on the blade with a good sharpening stone, and you may have to work your way down a little bit, start with a rougher grade and get the heavy work done, and then really smooth it over with a finer grade of stone or file. And easy to find good sharpening tools. You go to the hardware store, you can look online if you want to stay away from people right now, but he's absolutely right. You need to keep them sharp. That's the best thing you can do for yourself and for your tool.
Yeah, I use an ignition file for fish hooks and for just fine work as well. And they're relatively inexpensive, $5, $6, $7. You can get a nice ignition file, and I make a little handle for them and works well. Well, thank you, Richard. Yeah. Appreciate it. You always tell us about plants that are unique, Liz, and we haven't gotten into that at all. So what have you got for us?
Oh, you know, this year, and I run into so many plants when I'm out and about, and the problem is I may see them while they're on the bleeding edge, and they're not out in the market yet. And one of the plants that I'm now starting to see more out on the market, which I absolutely love, is an abelia, which up north here, we really can't grow a lot of abelias. That's a southern climate plant. But this one, and it's Abelia, mosinensis. And I did see that Jung's had one that's called Sweet Emotion. And these are wonderful, wonderful shrubs. The fragrance on them is unbelievably sweet and delightful, reminiscent of a jasmine. And the flowers are somewhat ball-shaped to the total head. is somewhat ball-shaped, and it has white with a hint of kind of dark pink at the base. And they're early spring bloomers, and so what's beautiful about that, early spring bloomers, and they bloom on old wood. And so what's nice about that is that once they're done blooming at the start of the year, you can give them a good hack and let them grow for the rest of the season, and then you don't have to do anything to it until the following year or even 3 years, until you do it again, you prune it again after it flowers. So it's one of those super easy plants, and the deer don't like it. So this is one for those of us who battle deer nonstop. I've had it in my yard for about 8 years now, and they don't bother it. They don't nibble on it. They don't bother it.
Now people are saying, wait a minute, what was the name of that again?
Exactly. Abelia mosinensis. It's Abelia. And if you go to Jung or look it up, and even if you do Abelia, A-B-E-L-I-A, with an M-O-S after it, and a dot, you should pull up mosinensis, but otherwise it's mosinensis, I believe. Mosinensis, I believe. And Jung's is called Sweet Emotion, but that one is fantastic. And so if you can pick that up, great. And I'm glad we're seeing that out on the market. For those of, and it's got a zone to about 4, I think, so it should be good. Pretty, you know, up north a little bit. One that's more for the southern part of Wisconsin, it's an old plant, Calicarpa. It's C-A-L-L-I-C-A-R-P-A. And we're seeing a lot more cultivars out on that one. It can be a bit touchy, but it's beautiful. It's a fall bloomer, and it's called Beauty Berry, I believe is a common name for it. And it's got purple bunches of berries along the leaf nodes on it. And the problem with this one is it's really late to sprout in the spring. And so the first couple of years, if you ignore it, it'll be very happy. Because otherwise, for those of us that tend to overprotect our plants here and there, you think, well, it's not going to come up, and you pop it out of the ground. It's just a very late sprouter. And so if you let it go, it'll be fine. Likes full sun. Deer don't bother that one either. So that one is a big one. One that I'm going to try this year. I have not tried it in the past, but there is a clematis that is for containers, and it's small. It's in the Tangutica family, yellow flowers. And it's called Little Lemons, and it is a container clematis, perennial. So you could put it in the ground, but it's a small one. So we're not talking about a climber. We're talking about more of a bush-type clematis. And a nice yellow is hard to find. The Tangutica, yeah, the climbers, they're actually pretty good, too. But this one looked interesting, so I'm going to give that one a try. Also, some of the fruits that are coming out right now are container fruits. So there's a blackberry, there's raspberry, there's blueberries that are all container sized. And oftentimes you'll find them, baby cakes, I think, was the blackberry that I had seen recently, and it's thornless and container. So to me, that one's top on the list, especially for people who don't have a lot of space or don't want to really start putting in fruit around the property. So that those are kind of nice. Rhubarb, I'm going to give, you know, I grew up with a huge patch of rhubarb, as did a lot of people. And for a long time, it was sort of forgotten. And this year, I'm going to put in a rhubarb bed because I'm missing rhubarb. And it's a fantastic landscape plant if you've got a sunny spot. Nothing grows under it once it's developed, so it shades everything out. So it really is nice. You don't have to weed much around it. And the leaves themselves are quite decorative throughout the year after you've done harvesting. They actually look quite nice. And there's some really nice dark red, sweeter type varieties out there. Canada Red is one that is nice. And so that is not going to be like your typical pucker kind of rhubarb. There is some pucker to it, but not as intense as some of the other ones. Other things to try for people who are really looking at adding fruit, vegetables, et cetera, to their landscape that might already be planted is to take a look at some of the columnar fruits. Columnar apples, they look like apples on a pole. How fun is that? And you can get red and yellow apples, and they're plenty hardy for us here. So those will give you maybe need like about a 2-foot space for them as opposed to a 20-foot space. And, you know, it's not going to give you 8 bushels of apples, but they are going to produce very nicely for you. So I would take a look at some of those. Other things I'm trying this year, I'm going to try ginger. You know, the root ginger, and that's an indoor-outdoor because it's tropical. But the beautiful thing about ginger and then turmeric as well, they will actually grow fairly nice as houseplants. And you don't have to get rid of the entire plant to harvest. So you can really just jam your hand down in there and break off a piece of the root and use it. So, you know, if people are looking for something a little bit different to try, you can pop that in a nice-sized container and move it in and out of the house. For winter and summer. Let's see, what else was looking good this year? Oh, last year I did loofahs, which were so much fun. And they're you don't have to do a thing to them other than they have a long growing season. And so you want to get those started inside or get some plants if you're going to go buy plants. But get those started inside and then get them on a trellis and let them go to town. They are so easy. And, you know, you'll see online where you have to soak them and peel the skins off. And no, you don't. No, you don't. All you have to do is grow them. And when they're done growing, when they're mature, the end of the season, you pick them off, let them dry somewhere, and just peel the outer skin off once it's completely dry. Shake the seeds out, and boom, you got a loofah. That's how hard it is. I mean, it's so wonderful. And a woman that I worked with a long time ago had used loofahs and did soap with them. So she would get a can, you know, like a tomato juice can or something that fit around whatever size loofah you had. She would put the loofah in there, then melt her soap mix, put that over the loofah, let it dry, and then slice it into bars once it was hardened, and then gave that as gifts. And so it was the loofah and the soap mix. And, you know, when you grow your own loofahs and make your own soap, you're like in puppy heaven. So that's fantastic. Another thing I'm trying this year is corn on deck. And I've seen mixed reviews for that, but it's actually sweet corn that is supposed to have a good pollination rate for a small amount of corn. And so you can grow it supposedly in a container and actually get corn off of the stalks. Stalks are shorter even than field sweet corn, which is shorter than regular field corn. And supposedly 2 ears per stalk. So you're not talking about 8 dozen corn coming off of a container unless you got a huge container. But even so, to add that as a decorative element to a container and be able to harvest some corn would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. So that's just kind of some of the stuff I'm looking at this year.
You got lots of good stuff. Marilyn in Mequon has a recommendation for us for a tool. Marilyn, hi.
Oh, cool. Hi. I'm calling about the long-handled Dutch hoe that you were discussing earlier. I got my Dutch hoe at Roy Diblick's Northwind Perennial Farm in Burlington.
Nice. Yeah, he is a huge proponent of Dutch hoes. And the one that I was talking about is yours a saddle hoe or is it a bladed push hoe?
It's a blade.
Blade, yeah.
Yeah, it's a triangular blade. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and those work fantastic. Is it a DeWitt or a Sneebor? Do you know the maker of that one?
No, I don't. I just know it as Dutch hoe.
There you go. And there's also, because there's a couple really good makers that come out of Europe, and one is Sneebor and the other is DeWitt. And those are fantastic tools, and I thought that might be the one that Roy sold at his place, but I'm not 100% sure. There's actually another one that came out not too long ago in the same Dutch hoe kind of family, only they call it Royal Dutch Hoe, and it has blades on both sides, so you can push and pull with it. That one is already ordered because that was a really good looking tool. So good suggestion, though. Good suggestion.
Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you very much, Barbara in Grand Marsh. What's on your mind? Barbara, I think she's having some phone problems. She wonders what'll happen if she just lets her garden go wild.
Well, it depends on what kind of a garden it is. Nature will have its way. And if it's a vegetable garden, weeds will pop. Some rogue plants will pop. And it will probably look like a mess. If you let your perennial beds go, pretty much the same thing will happen, only you'll have some flowers in and amongst the weeds. So it really depends on what you talk about letting it go. But you know what? If you're tired of it, gardening can stop, too. There was, I have had people say, okay, I took on too much. Now what do I do? And oftentimes removing is one of the better options if you can no longer upkeep your garden. And so when you're looking at, holy moly, now what do? Maybe it's time to call your friends, send it out on Facebook saying, you know what, I'm getting rid of my garden. Does anybody want plants? And let people come in and dig them out or dig them for them and leave them on the curb or something like that. Sometimes that's what gardening is taking a break.
Yeah, it is indeed. Well, how have you had good luck buying plants through catalogs and websites pretty much, you know, during this time?
Yes and no. There are, I still have gone and gotten mine in person because the places that I go to, the wholesale places, they're outside most of the time. And if you're careful, you don't really run into a lot of people and you're masked and you're careful. But I have had customers have good luck ordering things online. And, you know, the big places that have been doing business for a long time did a great job. I had a friend that ordered plants that came from a garden center that was losing business and said, you know what, we're going to sell our stuff online. It came beautifully packaged, wonderfully grown. So I think that there are great people out there selling plants, and I'm sure you'll get a handful that are not. But for the most part, gardeners are wonderful people.
They are indeed. But I still like going to the garden center.
Right.
It's just being there in person. It's, I don't know, it's a lot of fun. The smells, the activity and everything, it's just fun to do. Well, Liz, this has been a great pleasure as always, and I hope you will come back and be with us again.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you all the wonderful gardeners who called in with all of their fun suggestions and stories. It's so great.
Great fun. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, her website is simply thegardenhoe.com. So you can go there, thegardenhoe.com. She provides concierge horticultural services around the country. She's right here in Wisconsin, but her business is The Garden Hoe. Looking forward to having her on again. And looking forward to next week on Garden Talk. Laura Jull will be back to talk about pruning trees and shrubs. And then on Monday, Corey Pompey, the UW-Madison band director, joins us to talk about music. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. But stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.